Hey, welcome to the Mead House. Jeff here.
Chris here. Man, we are officially in summer.
We are officially in summer, and it feels like it.
It feels like it. That's okay. Summer, feeling like summer is fine with me. You know, I expect it to be hot, and I expect winter to be cold. If it's not cold for winter and hot for summer, I'm a little bit mad about it.
You know, there are people out there that say, well, if you're mad about being cold in winter, you can just put another blanket or put on a sweater, blah, 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 blah. But if you're hot in the summer, you can't really do anything about it.
You can only take so much off, and then the weather and cops come, neighboring cops become an issue.
To that I say, I'm a lot happier more hot than I am more cold.
Yeah, me too. Granted, 100%.
I do still happily sit outside in, you know, the 90-degree heat of summertime and go, oh, I need to make more iced tea.
Oh, no. Well, you know, I'll be honest. I'm a cold weather. I love cold weather. Comma. I'm good.
I like a crisp fall day, best of all, but I can handle the heat.
Heat is okay. You know, and so is the old man weather forecast for this episode.
Sorry, guys.
No, we do it. It's become a thing. I'm not going to fight it. But, guys, thank you for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. The numbers just keep creeping up. We really appreciate it. Every time I see my phone saying, you've got 2 or 3 or 11 new viewers. Thank you.
We appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much.
And those of you guys that write in, info@themeadhouse.com or find us on the Facebook page. And, God, we need to get more social media access here. You should get on the Instagrams and the TikToks and the Blue Skies and stuff.
Yeah, like and that. Right now I got a break around my schedule for fairs and such, so you know we can capitalize on this, man.
Yes, and we should, because unfortunately I also have a break as I'm waiting for more and more people to say, hey, that job you interviewed for, we would like to give it to you.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I keep pulling for you, man. I got pom-poms and everything. I've got the tequilas ready to go for the big pirate party.
I appreciate that. Man, the jobs market sucks these days.
It really does.
But, you know, at least I have fun events like this with my buddy to take my mind off that.
Yeah. So, you know, and also we need to thank Box and Barleycorn.
Of course.
Still sponsoring us, still awesome, still passionate about mead, beer, wine.
Cider, the whole nine.
Everything fermentable.
Even the more obscure stuff like kombucha and cider and koji and, yeah, all kinds of stuff.
And kombucha.
I said kombucha.
I thought you said koji.
Before I said koji, I said kombucha.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I was excited. I missed it. Anyway, but yeah, if it's fermentable, they got it, man.
Whether it's equipment or ingredients or even just the knowledge and know-how, they're kind of your go-to source. And it's a small company. I can't stress how much I appreciate supporting small businesses in this day and age because, you know, the other Jeff with the similar haircut, he's got enough money.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
He doesn't need my help.
Yeah, he does not need our help.
But I'll be honest, Jake and them, love to meet you. If you can stand to visit and go into Shawnee, Kansas and meet them there, they got a draw. They give you a beer, a cider, a mead.
Mm-hmm.
They're very welcoming. They'll let you in and you can run from there.
And Chris, what's the discount code we can give our audience?
It's MHP10.
It is.
Get you 10% off your online order.
I still am hitting you with that.
Yeah, and I know because law of averages exists. I will likely mess it up sometime in the future, but I'm going to try hard not to.
Well over a year in, and you're still kind of like, is MHP10?
Yeah, I actually say in my head every time, Mead House Podcast, before I say the MHP10. Oh, my God. I still do that because I mess it up so many times. And, I mean, percentage-wise, I'm doing great, but still. But anyway, but the guys at the Mead House, they will help you. I mean, if you're having trouble,
the guys at Bacchus.
Oh man, and the guys at Mead House too. I'm not gonna take that back because we will help you too.
We're a little harder to call, but you know you can drop us an email info@themeadhouse.com.
Or, yeah, if you need to, you know, text somebody and get an answer eventually, we got you.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Bacchus, call them up; they will help you right then. I mean, yeah, I messed that up. I'll own that. But by the same token, we'll help you.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Yeah,
it's the purpose of the show. Now, we have two meads today.
We do.
The first one, I'm not going to say the name of this.
Okay. Does it have a name?
It does have a name, but it's a little controversial in the habit of my names, and I'm still waiting on a severance check. So I don't want to say anything in a public forum that's going to risk that.
Okay, fair enough.
But this is a braggot that I made from a brew firm malt extract kit
good.
And some sunflower honey. Pretty basic.
Oh, it's got a pleasant smell.
Now, this is supposed to be a wheat beer. It's a little dark for a wheat beer.
It's got a nice light caramel color.
Yeah, it's a kind of a light brown caramel color-ish to it. Decent head to it. This came out a little flat. And I think part of that was just my own fault because I had this pump pretty high with CO2. And then as I was pouring the first couple into bottles with my little beer gun, it was a lot of foam. So I said, okay, that's too much carbonation. I need to back off. And I think I released too much too quickly, and it kind of flattened out as a process.
It is not a lot of head. I mean, even when you first poured it, the center of the head faded pretty fast.
Right. Now, with a Braggot with a higher alcohol content, it can have a little trouble retaining head like that, too.
So what are we looking at for ABV?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I want to say it was supposed to be about 8%, and I think I tried to target that more or less. 8 or 9% is about right.
Okay. Okay. For a beer, I'm not offended. It's got that beer bitter taste.
Yeah, there is.
It's not bad. And the reason I said that so fast was when I first took a sip, Jeff saw me reel back a little bit. Oh, that's bitter. But I'm thinking, yep, that's actually so much less bitter than almost every other beer I've had. It's not bad.
All things being equal, this is it's fairly light in the bitterness. I would put this in the order of maybe a little bit more bitter than a porter or a stout, but in that ballpark.
But, okay. Any of our longtime listeners will know, I am not a beer person, and would I want this for a drink on a regular basis? No.
No.
I mean, it's a beer. I don't like beers that well. But here, try this, like we just did now. I'm not mad about it.
A couple ounces, yeah. Treats you just fine. And this is, for me, I mean, Brewfirm, the company that made the kit that I started this with and just added some honey to for the sake of making a Braggot, they are no longer being distributed in the United States from everything I've seen. So the chances of me repeating this, pretty nil. Also, you know, the top of the name, because this is a one and done, so this is a moment in time. But this is my just kind of summer lawnmower beer.
Okay.
So.
Oh, and like I say, it's not heavy. It's not a heavy beer.
Nope.
And the reason I'm copying people is not because of his beer or my lack of beer connoisseurship. It's the fact that I tried to inhale my beer.
That can be problematic.
And I found out that I cannot inhale my drinks.
This is not recommended.
It's not recommended. One star out of 50. Do not recommend. Anyway, but for the meat of the day, now, again, no shade to your beer, Lister. I don't hate your beer. I don't like your beer, but I don't hate your beer.
But it's not your thing.
It's not my thing.
And that's fine.
But our mead of the day is a mixed berry and juniper berry mead from the Sap House Meadery. This is a 12% volume with 12% alcohol by volume with boysenberries, black currants, and juniper berries. And juniper berries, as we've said before, is what makes gin, gives gin its flavor.
Yes. And I think we had a boysenberry from Prairie Rose last week.
I wasn't thrilled with it, but it wasn't horrible. I wasn't thrilled.
With the oxidization in it, I don't know if we got a true boysenberry flavor. And granted, there are junipers and what was the third thing in here? Black currants in here, too. So we may not get a true representation of boysenberry with this either, but this should at least be interesting. And this is kind of a pretty deep red.
I call it dark purple because I'm picky like that. But it's a deep color. It's opaque.
And it's very fruity on the nose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, impressively fruity, and that's a good thing for me.
There's still some honey in the background, too. I like that. That's a nice
It's a dry.
It doesn't smell like a dry, but...
Is that a dry? It tastes like a dry to me.
It's off dry. I mean, it has enough tannin and enough kind of the acidity to it that it pretty well mutes the sweetness of it.
Yeah, I mean, mind you, you know, once again, I'm not a dry meat fan, but this is very drinkable. This is not a sit in the porch and enjoy the sunset. This is a with a meal.
Are you getting much juniper off of this?
Well, upon due consideration, no, not none, almost none.
If I get juniper off of it, it's kind of like an aftertasty tertiary little thing.
Okay.
The black currant and maybe the boysenberry are the strong thing.
Okay, take a sip, inhale through your mouth. I think I caught some there.
Yeah, it's aftertasty.
Yeah, it's aftertasty.
You get it. It's just not a primary thing. The black currant and the boysenberry are definitely like way up there. They are both very dark, tannic fruits,
and the,
as far as I know. The boysenberry by itself, again, I've not actually tasted just a boysenberry off the branch.
If I was to exclude the black, I know what blackcurrant tastes like. If I exclude that, and if that's the boysenberry taste I'm getting, it's okay.
Yeah,
but boysenberry is not a familiar thing to me.
Mm-hmm. No, I've had boysenberry jam, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's not the same.
No, it really is not a whole fruit. And, you know, they didn't put jam in the mead. They put whole fruit in the mead, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Because, this is another fine, I mean, it's a good example of Sap House Meadery.
Mm-hmm.
They make solid meads.
Consistently good stuff. And this is a little bit of a fruit bomb, but the off-dry taste makes it less of a, you know, bomb to me. It's not a super sweet like I'd expect from somebody like Kurt Stock.
Or 90% of what I make. But yeah, this is a good solid mead, and because it's the semi-dry,
mm-hmm.
the light dry that you said.
Off-dry,
thank you. Yeah. Off-dry, you said. It's the fruit is not as in your face, but it's very present. It lets you know it's there.
It's sweet enough that you still get the fruit character without it just being
just for
cloying,
yeah,
over the top.
That's a good bottle to have for this fruit.
And let's see, did they give us a? They didn't really declare the honey type, but I'm not getting a lot of honey behind the boysenberry and the blackcurrant either.
No, my best guess would be if they didn't declare the honey, it's probably like clover or something.
The wildflower blend.
Wildflower,
yeah.
I mean, don't know, not listed, but you know. I'm not mad. All right. Well, Jeff and I decided today would be a good day to talk about our plans for the summer, since now summer is now effectively in route here.
We have passed the day on the calendar that says it is now summer. So what are we doing this summer? And this is maybe a tease for future episodes. This is maybe just a, you know, us being pretty, what do I want to say, optimistic. And we might not hit all of these goals, but... Yeah, no, we're talking about what we're planning to do for the summer and what we want to hit.
Okay, well, Jeff, you want to start this one?
Sure. So, top of my list, I have a few different fruit meads that I have been sitting on and waiting for. And now that I'm finally opening up some more space in my garage, I have more space to put fermenters to do stuff. And Lord, do I have plans for fruit stuff. I've got a watermelon base and an apricot base and a lemon base. Ooh. All from... The was it Vintner's Harvest?
Yeah.
It's a 1 gallon thing and you make a 5 gallon fruit thing.
Yeah.
We need to make meads with those as opposed to just fruit wines.
Yeah.
Because I want to see how those go. The watermelon, I'm curious about, because we had that salted watermelon a while back.
And that was actually really, it was shockingly good. You could taste the salt.
The salt wasn't, salt, parts per million wise, I'm pretty sure I could get salt.
Yeah,
just add a little. But
the fact in a wine I could taste the salt and it wasn't offensive,
mm-hmm.
surprised me.
That I will give you, that it was a perceptible amount of salt, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
There are not very many alcoholic beverages where you can get away with salt.
Yeah.
And
if any of it should be watermelon, to be honest.
Salted watermelon is kind of a go-to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a little salt on your watermelon before you eat it, but it makes sense.
Or even cantaloupe, but I'm not going to, you know, hope for that because that's probably even tougher. Go ahead.
Yeah, it could go either way. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, but so watermelon. Well, what's the one you got?
An apricot and a lemon. And you've talked about the lemon.
I love lemon.
And the lemon kit, like, I think Baca stopped carrying it regularly because it kept coming out like Lemon Pledge, but...
Yeah, that's what they kept telling me, but I said, okay, if I order it, will you get it? I said, yeah, absolutely. Because they tried my lemon ginger, and they said, that doesn't taste like Pledge. I said, that's kind of the point,
mm-hmm.
but it was good.
Well, and I think with some kvike and some orange blossom honey, I think we can make a solid, maybe not explicitly only lemon, but a solid citrus sipper.
Okay, that sounds really good. Okay, I'll tell you, on my fruited meads, I actually have saved a gallon of dandelion.
Okay.
I'd like it done this year.
Dandelion?
Dandelion syrup from Vintner.
Nice. I'm very curious about
that. I am incredibly curious about this because last year I tried to do a lavender. I picked a whole bunch of lavender flowers, and I didn't even get to the honey part. I screwed it up so bad. It was such a fail.
Oh, no.
It was... I simmered it very lightly, the lowest possible temperature I could put on my stove, and it turned brown. And I'm sitting here, and I actually bit the bullet and tasted a little bit of the water that was in there. It's so bitter. It's so acrid. I'm saying, if I put this in a meat, I'm just wasting honey. So I'm hoping I can redeem myself a little bit with the Vintner's dandelion syrup. Because I wanted to do a dandelion mead for a while now.
Same. And short of like getting my son and every kid in the neighborhood to like go pick every dandelion they have that's not by the roadside and then strip off all the green parts so it's just the yellow parts.
Yeah, and then soak it in baking soda water, make sure there's no pesticides or anything on it. Dude.
It's a lot of effort.
That's a lot of effort.
The Vintner's Harvest jugs are such a... Oh, if it works, it works so good.
Yeah,
it's... And, you know, I've not tried all of their flavors. Obviously, they have a lot. They have a lot. But the couple that I've tried, like the blackberry, the raspberry, those have all come out really stellar.
Really good. I mean, this may sound a little bit like a Vintner commercial here, guys, but we're playing to our strengths here.
It's a cheat code, but it's an acceptable cheat code.
It's an absolutely acceptable cheat code.
Like, are you going to go take, like... gold medals in contests with this?
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not.
If you're really good, sure, but maybe not.
But if you're going to make something nice for you and your friends to drink on a, you know, like summer block party, hell yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Vintner has been so good to me. I could give a bottle of my blackberry vanilla straight out of the fermenter bucket in a bottle to somebody. Oh, that's really good. It's better 6 to 8 months later. But it was good to start with.
Such is the nature of meat, yeah.
But, okay, my next one I want to do is my wife requested me to do a mango meat. Now, I know we have a collaboration we're going to do with the grilled pineapple mango habanero.
Mm-hmm.
This is a straight mango meat she wants me to make for her.
Okay.
And because I have an entire gallon of mango syrup, she's getting a lot of mango meat, unless I can think of something to add to it that would make me happy.
Mango syrup. Tell me about the mango syrup.
It's, again, Vintner's.
Oh, okay.
It's straight from Vintner's.
It's the mango's Vintner's. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's just straight mango syrup from Vintner's.
I was going to say, we had a one of our listeners a long time ago wrote in that they had made a mango mead with canned mango, and that worked very well.
Yeah, and I can completely see that.
Everything they told me.
Now, another one I thought of, and my wife is on the fence of me even trying this. She said, this could go horribly awry. It was going to be a small batch, 1 2-gallon. Because she's absolutely, you know, I have learned after 33 years of listening to my wife that she's usually pretty close to right if she's getting dead on rice. Because, you know, she is the voice of reason in my enthusiasm most of the time. I'm going to make a jackfruit mead.
Interesting.
Now, I've used jackfruit as a, you know, you've heard of doing the jackfruit as pulled pork and all
right,
that.
Right.
And I made that. And it was shockingly, my mouth was very confused because I knew I had made it. And when I tasted it, it tastes like pulled pork.
It's 95% there, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's really convincing. But I said, I would like to do a, and this is going to be a canned young jackfruit mead.
Okay.
And that's another one thing. And the other one I'm looking at really, really hard, I'm doing a raspberry lemon.
Okay. That sounds very tasty. I mean, both high acidity fruits, so it's going to be on the sweeter side, I imagine.
And I'm going to try really hard to keep it red. It's going to be hard.
Well, you know, you use your OptiBread, you use your Rouge Boost.
Rouge Boost, yeah.
Maybe throw in BM4x4 from what I've heard.
I haven't heard that one, but I'll give it a try.
BM4x4 from what I've heard is very good at holding on to the anthocyanins that, you know, red wines and things like that will throw.
Okay, so good.
I'll would be useful. That said, I like that. I think that's a great one. Another fruit that I would like to approach that is not from Vintner's Harvest, soursop.
Soursop, yeah, we talked about that in the fruit episodes.
Yes, and
I am willing to go get help going on getting soursop for this batch to do a joint venture on this one.
That might be a little later in the summer. I have other things that are a little higher in priority, but I definitely want to make a nice big, I kind of want to make a big 5 or 6 gallon of soursop and then try maybe taking a gallon here, a gallon there and put other flavors with it. Cause I think soursop is nice all by itself with the right acidity and the right sweetness level. It could be pretty good just by itself.
Yeah.
But I think there's a combination level for, hey, do we want to add an extra fruit here? Do we want to add some fun spices? Like, there is a creativity level there that we could
Exploit.
further
Yeah.
explore, and it would be well to our
Yeah.
just our fun and enjoyment to do
That'd
that.
be awesome. The other one, another one I'm thinking of doing, and this is outside the fruit ones. I'm going to start my Earl Grey tea, my Moonlight Earl Grey tea. Great. And this one is going to be a 7 gallon batch. I'm going to pull off 2 to 3 gallons to the side of it. And I'm going to turn that into a London Fog.
Which is where you add lactose?
Yes, exactly. Because anybody that's had London Fog, it's simply a Earl Grey tea with milk of some kind. Oat milk, real milk, whole milk, skim milk, whatever milk you'd use.
Sounds about right.
And then it makes a, and they add a little bit of lavender, which is already in the Moonlight Earl Grey. And a little bit of lavender, or a little bit of vanilla rather, not lavender, but vanilla. I said lavender twice, I know. But a little bit of vanilla, which is already in the Moonlight Earl Grey. So, I mean, it's already there. All I have to do is add the lactose to get that milky mouthfeel for hopefully an Earl Grey mead, or, a London Fog mead.
That should be interesting. I like the idea of that quite a bit.
Because I've made the Earl Grey tea mead, and that was fabulously complex and tasty. It was really good. You remember that one?
Yes, it was a little bit of a vanilla bomb to me because you were using the Moonlight as opposed to like the regular Earl Grey. And I think if I remember right, I'd said, hey, you should split this up a little bit and just use a regular Earl
Yeah,
Grey.
and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to add more Earl Grey than Moonlight.
Push more of the bergamot character than
Yeah,
the
yeah, yeah.
vanilla. But
So, what else you got in mind?
on this track of fruit and other stuff, I definitely want to hit session meats. Because it's
Okay.
that time of year where a little something light and maybe bubbly is just the ticket. And hey, if you're going to make a an 6 to 8% ABV mead using Kveik, you can turn that around in a week and change
Yeah.
easily. I've done it before. I will do it again. And there are so many fun flavor combinations. It occurs to me that this is a great opportunity to do stuff like the raspberry chipotle. Or just any fun fruit or spice combination, things like that.
Did we just talk about doing the grilled pineapple mango habanero as a session?
I think we should talk about that. Yes, I think that's, with the grilled pineapple habanero and mango all together, that's enough flavor between just those flavors and the grill factor and all that. That we could get away with a little heavier ABV, but I think it could be damn pleasant.
I was talking like, I know it's not sessions up to 7, roughly.
7 to 8, yeah.
7, yeah. I mean, if we even if we pushed up to like 9 to 10, I don't think we'd hurt ourselves too
I
badly.
think, yeah, 10 might be a good ballpark for that one, just with the amount of flavor we could throw in there and still, then we back sweetened with a little extra, and I think we'll be okay.
Now, mind you, I now am in the possession of more carboys, buckets, and containers than you have
Yes.
because you I donated to my cause.
I've been paring down.
Yeah, you've been paring down, but I have been not been paring. I've been paring up a lot. So if you actually run out of containers, let me know. I can probably push one towards you.
What I'm missing at this point in time is not carboys, it's counter space.
Details,
Working on that.
details. But I'm honest, the idea of Kvike has deeply interested me.
Yes, and Kvike is it's deeply ingrained in my summer plans because there are all kinds of things you can do with Kveik, and so we get into these 90-day days, just like hey, put a carboy out on your back porch with a towel wrapped around it, valid and encouraged.
And this, for those of you who have not didn't hear about our Kvike episode, Kvike is a hot ferment mead yeast that doesn't have the off esters that we want to avoid by keeping temperature stable and cool.
Now that I have more space in my garage, I have a counter space that I can put a aquarium on. I have an old 20-gallon long aquarium that I am repurposing for Kveik experiments. And I've heard of people pushing Kveik as high as 110 degrees
Oof.
with a sous vide in place to just keep it a constant 110 and feed it with nutrient because Kveik is a nutrient hog.
Oh yeah, I mean, you mentioned one time it's Kvike needs like at least four times nutrients.
Yeah, if you're fermenting Kvike hot and you're using like a Tosna protocol, instead of doing the hey, it's a low ABV or sorry, a low nutrient requirement thing, so you take it times 0.7, you need to make that times four.
Yeah, times four, 4.5.
It's a lot.
Because, you know, this high temperature, to avoid the hot mead taste, which is kind of off-putting, I'll be honest.
Well, and it's not necessarily the same as fermenting other Saccharomyces cerevisiae hot. You're not going to get the same kind of, like, fusels, per se, but you can definitely start to get the hydrogen sulfide smell, like that kind of rotten egg smell.
Yeah, or even the nail polish remover smell.
Yeah, well, that is more in line with the hot ferment from the high alcohols, the fusels and things like that. Right. Yeah, Kvike can handle the heat. Kvike can handle heat up until the heat kills it.
And the trade-off would be, again, if you didn't see our Kvike episode, the trade-off is you can get this done in a week or two. Mm-hmm. You get the performance in a week or two.
Not only that, but you get brilliant smells and flavors from it. The Voss I like to use has a very like lemony, citrusy smell. Like I sent a Voss mead made with just Pilsner grain and a basic wildflower honey, and they accused me of not declaring that I put oranges in it.
Yeah, but the problem was you didn't put oranges in it.
I didn't, but. That Kvike.
Yeah, the Kvike.
That Kvike, though. Hothead, if I remember right, has like a cool mango flavor to it. And maybe that's what we need to do with the mango and pineapple.
I like that idea.
Because we'll lean into that tropical fruit flavor, yo.
I really want to do a good tropical fruit flavor.
Yeah.
Neat. That has been actually on my bucket list for 3 to 4 years now, to be honest.
Another one that is on my bucket list that I really want to hit and that Kvike is going to help me with. Hopped meats. I know this is not your bag.
It's not my bag, but I'm going to try them.
But years and years and years ago, I had a pretty nice hopped mead that I made with, I think it was like Centennial and Saaz hops. And I was using a process from Ricky the Mead Maker over at Groenfeld Meadery. Like, I don't know how many episodes he's talked about this with or how many like different podcasts he's talked about his process with. But for some of his meads, he straight up takes D47 at 84 degrees.
Shoot, that's hot.
It's hot. And it throws some off flavors. But some of those off flavors are good. Managing the hydrogen sulfide is kind of a thing. And I did a hopped mead with his process at 84 degrees. And it came out real stellar.
Okay. And let's be blunt. You know, the things I talked about earlier this year is I want to do late last year, early this year. What it was the Queen's Mead. Mm-hmm. It has hops.
Yeah.
It's in there. I mean, they weren't really specific on which hops it is, so I need to figure that out. But
I would say for an older recipe like the Queen's Mead, you probably want to go with a noble hop of some kind. That would be like Hallertauer or Saaz or Mittelfrüh or Spalt. Three of those are German. One of those is Czech, but those are all for older style of hops that are more floral than anything else.
And honestly, you know, trying to get my the bush to flower to get me leaves, that may be a next year thing too. So it's I can't strip the leaves, do what I want. So
right. Well, that is the nature of growing stuff to do stuff. And I have my own little spice garden growing now. So hopefully I will have some stuff to throw into fall meads.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I gotta replace a lot of my meads because partly due to me being generous and handing things out to people and probably being doing this, people say, hey, can I try this? And if I've got it, I'm not one to say no because I really want you to enjoy what I think it was a solid mead. I mean, is it gourmet? Probably not, but sure. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
So my reserves are a little low right now.
The advantage of those summer meads is we can turn around some batches pretty damn quick. So,
yeah,
this might be a good build-up time for you.
You know, that's my big ones for this week. The only other thing I have in mind that kind of, you know, this is not a priority to me in any shape, fashion, or form. I want to try a multi-spiced mead. And I'm not talking about like a pumpkin pie or an apple pie, which the spice profile is established. I want to do some exotic spices like a long pepper spice.
Mm-hmm.
with some floral, some type of floral honey or an orange honey or something like that.
Right.
And I want to see what I can do with
Your
those and
own proprietary spice blend as opposed to something that's a little bit more
established.
right.
Yeah. I want to do like the Birds of Paradise spice, and I want to do the long pepper, and there's a couple others that I cannot remember the name off the top of my head. Anyway, and I'm not going to make moans about that, but I want to see. And that, what was that? It wasn't ginger. It was the other one that was related to ginger.
Galangal or something like that.
Galangal. I want to see if that would do in there. And I'm going to have a bunch of quart jars with a base mead and see what in the world I can figure out.
Well, and I think here is the this is where I in my long game kind of thought process go. You know, if you're going to get quart jars with different meads and you're going to put spices in them, you should just make tinctures as well and have like a quart jar of mead and a quart jar of like high proof alcohol. And then, you know, once you get close to what you want and you can start blending stuff, maybe you've got a stronger spice base to add to your this, that, the other,
Yep, that is
kind of
not
a
a bad idea.
cheat. The other thing that we've been talking about a little bit to a lot of it, and I need to get done, I want to make a gruit.
Yeah, the gruit has been a thing.
And
I would like to have a beer I can drink.
yeah.
I'll be blunt. I
Well,
mean,
it's going to be a grit braggot, but still,
yeah.
it's something beery I can enjoy with my buddy.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to have a bottle of quote unquote beer. Hang around guys with a bottle of their own beer. And not have them going, "What's your problem?" My problem is I don't drink that.
Well, and the couple episodes we did on Gruit spices, I think we got some great results
Well,
from
I think we did pretty good.
the birch bark and various combinations we did with that, with like the I don't think it was the dandelion root. I think it was the other one. Off the top of my head, I
I
can't
can't remember either.
I'm blanking.
Shockingly, we go through a lot of stuff. It's not shocking that we can't remember every little detail.
But we have, you know, audio recordings as, you know, reference,
Yeah.
so we can go back and listen.
And that pie mint we're working on here. We
Yes.
gotta give a report on that sometime in the near future.
Yeah, we got to get that. That might need to get a little heat on it to really kick up the
Yeah.
glycon to make it work. But it's that time of year, so we
Yeah,
could definitely do that.
but I wouldn't mind making all of my neighbors go, "What in the hell are you doing all these buckets outside on your porch?" Including maintenance going, "What in the heck are you doing all these buckets inside your porch?" I said, "Leave me alone. I'm doing my thing."
No, at this point, the major drawback to buckets and fermenters out on my porch is not maintenance or neighbors or things like that. It is too many chickens and too many dogs going, "Oh, what's this?
Yeah, well, that smells funky. Let me try it.
Can I lick it? Can I peck at it? I'll try."
Hey, we'll try. But those girls are yours, man. Those chicken girls are being a problem. A couple of them are kind of curious.
They are very curious. It is the nature of chicken is can I peck at it? Well, I didn't accomplish what I wanted from pecking at it. Let me try again.
Yeah. They're not smart, but I will tell you. Can I peck that? And the answer is always yes. Do I get what I want? The answer is usually no.
Will I try again? The answer is a solid maybe.
Yeah, that's solid, maybe. But yeah. But that's kind of our plans for the year, guys. This is how we plan a summer, plan a season, I should say.
And is this foreshadowing for episodes you're going to see in the future? Yeah,
Oh
probably.
yeah, more than likely.
I mean,
We're absolutely going to talk about these things.
the hobby meads, I'm sure I could come up with, like, there is part of me that wants to do, previously I had done like a solid boil a little to get the bitterness and then like basically a dry hop where you just set it in and soak it for a while. Part of me wants to do a solid like 2 or 3 gallon batch. And then split that into quarts with a little bit of dry hop for various different hops and try a few different hops. And am I going to subject my buddy Chris, who is allergic to hops, to 12 different hop varieties? Probably not.
Well, no, you probably will, just not all at once. Yeah,
Will I definitely say, hey, here are like the 2 or 3 that I like the best. Try these and see what you think.
more than likely.
Yeah, if it's a little ounce or two, I'm not too worried.
The 2 ounces I took earlier, I'm not hurt.
No.
I mean, I have to drink a fair amount. I mean, honestly, when I found out I was allergic to hops, I went through 16 ounces. It takes a little bit to get me started, but after that, oh boy, baby. But Is there anything,
and this is just a question recently, just actually right now occurred to me, is there anything out there you'd like to try brewing, beer-wise, mead-wise, any kind of alcohol you want to make, that you just said, I don't recall anybody doing this, but I want to do this? That come up. Mine personally is, I made what I called freezer fruit mead, where I took all the little packets of sandwich-sized bags of fruit out of my freezer, thawed it, threw it in a bucket in a sleeve, and said, let's see what happens. And I had blackberry, and I had blueberry, and I had raspberry, and I had cherry, and I had cantaloupe, and I had pineapple, and I had a lot of different fruits. And I think that was all of them, but it's been a while. And this was simply, all these fruits have been in my freezer for a while. We're never going to eat them as is. Let's see what happens.
Freezer burn and just ice formation and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And what came out was an actual good fruit cocktail mead. I mean, it was pretty solid.
And my previous co-host, Ryan, did like a freezer clean out kind of mead too. He said he just basically did that once a year as a matter of course and consequence, because stuff builds up, right?
Yeah, stuff builds up. You know, and I'll be honest, my freezer is full in my refrigerator. The refrigerator-freezer combo is full. It's mostly stuff I can't ferment that I'd be happy to ferment. So, you know, I can't do it again currently.
But
that, you know, I don't, you know, the only thing I have really sure that I'm really, this is horribly, horribly, horribly experimental for me, mm-hmm. is I'm going to be making a rather large batch of dandelion mead that I mentioned earlier. That's my big, I wanted to do that because dandelions have fascinated me for a long time. And I walked into Bacchus and I said, oh, wow, dandelion syrup. Well, here we go. And I bought it that moment. My wife looked at me like, what the hell are you doing?
You know, they have a hemp-based syrup. At least they did at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake was telling me that, like, that had won a pretty major award at some kind of a trade show or something like that. So I've been curious. I don't even know what a hemp-based mead would taste like.
Probably pretty dank.
Possible.
Yes. I don't know. I really don't know.
Who knows? I would like to know. I might try that. But as I've said, I've got a few of those.
You're saying we should go to Box and see things that are unusual.
That's a danger zone, yo.
I'm for it.
There are some other projects that are a little bit more out there that I may not get to. They've been on my list for a while, and I still haven't gotten to. But I recall talking with Laura Angiotti a long time ago. She is kind of the historian of mead, and she told me about one called a Thassalamiel.
Explain.
Basically, it works like this. It's one part wine must, one part water, one part honey, one part ocean butter. So it's a salty piment.
So you're talking filtered salt, ocean water.
This is an old Roman recipe. So ostensibly not filtered, unless maybe they, you know, did a sand filter kind of thing with it. But
unique. I'd never heard of such a thing, so that'd be interesting.
If it was worth putting down in a recipe book, there must have been something to it, I would think. Well, do I do this with white wine? Do I do this with red wine? Do I do this with a little 1 gallon wine kit and some other bits and bobs? Maybe. It's worth trying. The other one that I really liked, and I don't remember exactly what town in Germany this was from, but basically it was a simple mead made with hops and sage. Now at the time, this historical recipe was put down and on paper. They were probably working with like a Hallertau or a Spalt or one of these noble hop varieties, because those are the old hop varieties.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to do a two-part on this one. Let's do regular garden sage and regular noble hops. But let's also do a corollary. Let's do pineapple sage and New Zealand hops with funky, weird, you know, tropical fruit flavors.
Okay.
I think that would be a fun take on an old tradition that has gone by the wayside.
Awesome. I like that.
Will I get to that this summer?
Yeah, maybe. We have mentioned before that our list of what we want to do is far exceeds our ability to do them. I'm just restocking my standard stock. A friend of mine asked me recently how many different kinds of meat I've made. I'm going to ask you that same question right now. How many different kinds of meat do you think you've made? Rough ballpark, doesn't have to be exact. I've made a lot of mead.
Kinds of. Different kinds of.
I've repeated the same kind of recipe maybe 3 times.
So a lot.
I would say in the neighborhood of 50 to 80 different varieties of mead.
I've done 17 to 20. I think I've bottled and given to people to try. A couple of them I said, no, I'll drink this because I wouldn't want to embarrass myself. But yes,
a number of those 50 to 80 went down my gullet or the drain, mostly my gullet. Because is it good enough for me to drink? Yeah, okay. If it's a slow day and I'm tired, I'll tip back a bottle and go to bed. Does that mean I want to share it with other people? No.
Oh, no. Now, here's something we mentioned really early on in our adventure here in Mead House. I mean, I'm talking over a year ago.
Okay.
We talked about doing, if I want to do a pie recipe, let's say I want to do a cherry pie or a coconut pie, coconut cream pie. It's not the cherry. It's not the coconut. It's the crust. How do we get that crust flavor? And you mentioned oat.
Flaked oats.
Flaked oats.
Flaked oats, flaked wheat. I don't know how prominent they are in Bacchus at the moment because they used to have their own little part of the shelf. I don't know that that exists anymore. I think they've got more product that moves a little bit more readily, but you use.
That's okay.
Yeah. I'm sure if you go to the counter and say, hey, I need a pound of flaked whatever, whether it's rice or oats or wheat or whatever the hell, they can make that happen for you.
But would that make a crusty like flavor inside the cherry, coconut, whatever pie and meat?
The oat or the wheat give you some of that oaty, weedy flavor. Mm-hmm. And you have to think that the process of flaking that, where that basically they gelatinize it between two hot rollers.
Okay.
That makes the sugars in the grain unfermentable. And so that flavor gets retained that way.
Okay, we need to. Well, that's another experiment we can do. Mm-hmm. I would like to. There's a lot of things I want to do with a bready, crusty flavor.
Right.
And, you know, if we can find a way to do that, it'd be awesome. I mean, we still have the coconut fat infusion and the peanut butter infusion. We have never, they're still on my counter at home. You still got those.
We need an update on those flavors.
Yeah.
See
where they're still sitting there. I still shake them periodically when I see them. Well, I need to bring them back, see what we can do.
Hell, we put a little of that coconut infusion into some of our fruity session meads, and I think we have something there.
Worth a try. I mean, I only got like 32 ounces, but hey, it's been there for over a year.
It's got to be pretty concentrated at this point, so I think a little would go a long way.
Yeah. We'll
probably be measuring that in drops, not ounces.
Well, guys, you and our listening audience here, I'll be honest, Jeff and I haven't barely looked at the screen at this point. You've been in a conversation that you're welcome to listen to, but we went off without you.
Yeah, this has been a dialogue a little bit more than a exhibition, but
yeah. But I hope this gave you some ideas of what you can do. We'd love to hear what you do. Go to themeadhouse.com. Tell us what you're up to, what your plans are. Love to hear them.
And if you're listening to this a little later in the season, we would love to hear your big summer wins because we will definitely be talking about our big summer wins.
Oh yeah, this season. I mean, we are not one to not brag.
there is a lot planned. Whether all of this reaches a good conclusion or a conclusion of any kind is up in the air, very much so. But I think both of us have really solid plans for the summer, going into, you know, the fall, building up our stockpiles of drinkies, so to speak.
Because, you know, I'm a bear by nature. You know, when winter comes, hibernate, give me a mead. Throw food at me every once in a while. I'm pretty good.
There's a 5 gallon of our well over a year now Braggot that is just waiting for this fall.
Ooh. Yeah, come on, summer. I got to get through you to get to fall. But anyway, guys, thank you for joining us here. Hope you learned something. Hope you got good ideas for yourself. Jeff, Chris, thank you for your time. Happy meeting everybody. Take care.
See you next time.